You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Hope everybody had a great Valentine's weekend. If you're a new listener, thanks for giving our podcast a chance. Those that regularly listen to the show, as always, glad to have you on board. It's Mock Draft Monday. I'm going to be breaking down a number of listener mock drafts. All you had to do today was draft a quarterback. Looking forward to breaking those down and checking out the picks you made for the Seahawks. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We're only entering week two of the offseason. I know it feels like it's been much longer than that, given how last week played out. But already, the rumor mill is flying. Even after last offseason, there are some new obstacles that all 32 teams are going to have to deal with in coming months. And it's been a topic we've discussed a number of times in this podcast already. We're going to continue to bring it up. The salary cap plunging to between $175 and $185 million. That is a huge deal. This is unprecedented. You're going to have a lot of high-priced vets getting cut. We've already seen a number of teams starting to do that to create cap space so they can maybe sign some players in free agency. And of course, they'll be able to sign their players after the draft as well. These teams are just dealing with a cap crunch unlike any we've seen in recent history because of COVID-19. And some of these teams are trying to use different methods to create cap space as well. They're trying to find suitors to trade players. This is proving to be an especially difficult year already for teams that are in the trade market trying to move players and offset salary because other teams are trying to do the same thing. But it shouldn't be a surprise that the Seahawks have officially been linked to one of those players as a potential suitor, per my colleague Ed Kratz of the Eagle Maven at Sports Illustrated, and has confirmed with other sources the Seahawks have indeed inquired about the availability of tight end Zach Ertz. There's no question Philadelphia is entering a massive rebuild. Just look what's going on over there. They've got a new coach. They moved on from Doug Peterson. They are in salary cap hell. They're trying to trade their quarterback, Carson Wentz, who only a few years ago got a huge multi-year extension. He was supposed to be the franchise quarterback for years to come, and now they're just trying to move him, and they can't even get a first-round pick offered in exchange for him, given his struggles that he's had the last couple of seasons. Any veteran asset is probably available from the Eagles, with maybe an exception like a player like Fletcher Cox. I could even see him being available at the right price. Everyone seems to be game. This team is clearly in the middle of a major rebuild in the NFC East. And then you look on the flip side, the Seahawks could use a tight end. And this is something that has been talked about in this podcast recently. You look at the depth chart, Greg Olsen has retired. Stephon Sullivan is now a Carolina Panther, leaving in free agency. The Seahawks did not sign him to a future reserve deal, so he became an unrestricted free agent. He is gone. Jacob Hollister is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Who knows if he's going to be brought back? So Ertz would make some sense for a number of reasons. If you consider that, A, Shane Waldron, the new offensive coordinator, he's going to be installing an offense that could feature tight ends more heavily involved in the passing game. If it's anything like what we've seen in LA with the Rams and Sean McVay, a lot of 11 and 12 personnel, and the tight ends are going to be involved down the seam in motion pre-snap, trying to create advantageous matchups so that Russell Wilson can get the football out to one of those tight ends. Ertz certainly would fit in that system. He is a very good move tight end that you can do a number of different things with. And again, they just don't have very much depth there. Colby Parkinson right now would be your number two tight end, and he only caught two passes last year. He missed half the season with a broken foot. He's a player they're certainly high on. They think he's got a very high ceiling and that he can be a big-time contributor in this offense. Will Dissly played all 16 games last year, but his production was down compared to the previous two seasons when he got off to hot starts and then suffered season-ending injury. So there are question marks at that position. And when you look at what Ertz has done, five straight years before last year with 74 more receptions and at least 800 receiving yards. He's only 30 years old, so it's not like he's ancient. But when you look at why Seattle likely isn't going to pull this off, it's simple. This is, as I mentioned, a salary dump. The Philadelphia Eagles are trying to unload a bunch of big salaries because they're more than $40 million above the salary cap. They are in a position where they need to create quick money just so they're able to function in a normal offseason. And right now, that means they're going to have to unload a lot of different players just to be able to get back into the black. And Ertz is one of those players coming off an injury-marred season in which he only played 11 games. He had less than 400 receiving yards, a career low, one receiving touchdown. Not all this was his fault. Again, he had some injuries. The quarterback situation was a mess with Carson Wentz struggling and then getting benched for Jalen Hurts. And so when you consider that, yeah, maybe Ertz is going to be able to bounce back, but what are the Seahawks going to be able to do with his cap hit? Right now, his cap hit's over $12 million. Now, the Eagles would absorb some of that by trading him, but this is still a significant cap hit for a veteran tight end that right now the Seahawks simply could not afford. Now, they have ways to create cap space. There are ways that they can fit Zach Ertz onto the roster, but there are other position groups like guard and center that Russell Wilson is pleading for the team to improve. So there's a number of other things they need to do. They can't eat up a big chunk of their cap space on an aging tight end. And just consider the fact he's been banged up the last couple of years. He's got a lot of tread on his tires, 117 career games. Do you learn from the Greg Olsen thing last year? And that's not to say that Ertz is in a similar situation. Ertz is 5 years younger, so he may have a lot of really good football left in him. But there still is something you can take away from that Greg Olsen situation. Don't invest too much in a player like this that you're going to have to pay a lot of money to bring to Seattle, and you have concerns about him potentially staying healthy. So right now, this should be viewed as simply exploratory. John Schneider doing what he always does. He's never going to leave a stone unturned. He's always looking for bargains. This doesn't necessarily fit that, though, when you consider the cost. They don't have the draft picks to be throwing around to try to make trades like this. They only have four of them for April's draft, unless they're going to start digging into their 2022 draft capital, which obviously John Schneider could do. We've seen him do that in the past. But unless they're doing that, or the Eagles have a young player on the Seahawks roster that the Seahawks deem expendable that they're willing to trade as part of the deal to facilitate this salary dump, I'm just not sure that there's a way the Seahawks can do this. Maybe they can restructure the contract with Ertz. Maybe he's on board with that, going from a team that's clearly going to be rebuilding now to a team that's consistently been in the postseason. A lot of this really comes down to how desperate the Philadelphia Eagles are. And obviously, they already have proven that they are, based on all the reports we're seeing. They've got a lot of cap space they need to open up. And so maybe the Seahawks can persuade them to deal away Ertz and only give up a future seventh-round pick, or only give up maybe a reserve player that's a young guy that intrigues the Eagles. There are some options here, but at this point, I think, again, this is an exploratory thing for John Schneider. They're just looking into it, as they always do. A trade is not imminent. We will see what happens. I think that there is certainly some interest, but I think it would take a lot of dominoes to fall for this trade to happen, the Seahawks to actually make it, and I'm not sure if it's necessarily the move they should be making right now. Coming up next in the second quarter, as we've been doing every Monday so far this offseason, it's Mock Draft Monday. We asked you, the listeners, to send us in your mock drafts for the week with one specific requirement. This time, you had to draft a quarterback. I'm going to be looking at three of the mock drafts from our listeners on today's show, breaking those down, looking at a number of different prospects. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, here on our Monday episode. Glad to have you listening in. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's Mock Draft Monday. We've been doing this every week. It's one of our favorite segments. We asked you, the listener, to contribute your weekly mock drafts. I'll be combing through a handful of them here over the next couple quarters. This week, the only requirement, given all the Russell Wilson craziness from last week, you were required to draft a quarterback with one of your draft picks for the Seahawks. So without further ado, let's get to it. Our first mock draft coming from Floyd_81. This one was done on the PFF mock draft simulator. Now, I will say this, we're going to encounter it again today. I'm not sure why this has happened, but Pro Football Focus's mock simulator has a bunch of players that you can draft on there that ultimately went back to school and did not declare. And so, again, when we encounter those type of situations, I'll make sure to point out that's a player the Seahawks cannot draft. Again, our listeners aren't expected to know that, but there are a few players on their simulator for whatever reason they have not removed as options that can be drafted. So that kind of throws a wrench into these a little bit. Wasn't an issue on this particular five-player draft, though. And there was one trade made by Floyd 81, the Seahawks sending pick 56 and a seventh rounder from 2022 to the Buccaneers to get pick 64 as well as pick 257. So adding one more late rounder. The Seahawks only have four picks. These are the type of trades they're going to have to make if they want to have more selections, and they're going to come late in the draft, sixth and seventh round most likely. With that 64th pick, this is one that I've seen a few mock drafts show, and I'll be honest, I don't think there's any way Najee Harris out of Alabama is available at the end of the second round. I'm just not seeing it. End of second, early third, I think he is going to go off the board in the first round, early second at the latest. I think he is probably the best running back in this draft class. This would be the type of situation, though, if he somehow fell, if he was there at 64. I don't know that the Seahawks want to force the issue drafting a running back, but if they're going to, this would be the type of player that the Seahawks simply cannot resist, and I don't blame him. He's scheme versatile. He can run between the tackles. He can run outside. Not necessarily the type of running back that has that extra gear where he's going to take off and run for a 90-yard touchdown. That's not something you're going to see this guy do, but he is a beast in short yardage. He's going to plow through defenders at 230 pounds. He is a guy that seems to fall forward every single play, and he's gotten better as a receiver. That was kind of a knock on him early in his career with the Crimson Tide, and now he's become a very reliable receiver that can create yardage after the catch. He becomes a matchup nightmare. To me, this is a Seahawks running back who I don't think is available at 64, but if he is, again, this is the type of player that I cannot resist picking at number 64. If I'm John Schneider and Pete Carroll, I just think he'd be a perfect fit. I just don't expect he's going to be there. And then at pick 129, Seahawks having a huge gap. This is what you can expect in April's draft. They're going to have some big gaps between picks because they just don't have very many of them. This would be an interesting pick to couple with Najee Harris as your new running back. Quinn Miners, the center out of Wisconsin Whitewater, I actually think he's better suited to be a guard at the next level. And what I love about him, the little bit of tape I've been able to see, again, Wisconsin Whitewater, you're talking about a Division III school. And so there's not a lot of college tape out there, but he did play well at the Senior Bowl. He has one of the favorite characteristics I look for from offensive linemen. He's ornery. This is a guy that gets after it every single snap. He's aggressive. He plays physically, and he's not intimidated by anybody. These small school prospects, that's something you want to see when you watch him at these all-star practices and all-star games. And he came in there and held his own. One of the best linemen that week going against D1 talent as a D3 player. He's around 320 pounds, so he's got the size to be able to hold up in the NFL. Again, I think he's a guard. The Seahawks could certainly use a left guard, and he fits the makeup of what they typically are looking for up front with his attitude, his orneriness, his aggressiveness. So I think that'd be a great pick at 129. We'll have to see if he's available at that point. He's a player that stock was rising tremendously because of how he played in the Senior Bowl. Third selection to pick 168. This might be the first one here on this draft that I'm kind of scratching my head just a little bit about, and that's Milton Williams, a defensive lineman out of Louisiana Tech that opted to declare early. He still had a year of eligibility left. I look at him, he's 278 pounds. As a defensive tackle, that's on the light side. Even for the Seahawks, they like to be in that 285 to 300-pound range, typically 290 to 300s, where most of their three techs are going to fall. And 278 is a little bit light, but this is a player in Williams that is growing into his frame still. He only has played 1 year as a defensive tackle. His first 2 years playing at Louisiana Tech. He was a defensive end, and you got decent sack production out of him the last couple of years, 5.5 sacks in one season, 4.5 sacks in the other. So he has been a guy that's been able to get after the quarterback a little bit. He's pretty athletic for his size. Again, he's got a frame at 6'4". He could add some weight to that body. So maybe this is a player around 160, 170 that you can take a look at. If he's got some of the physical tools you're looking for up front, the athletic tools you're looking for, you can add some weight to him. Maybe he's a bit more of a project, but he is not a guy that I have very high on my board as far as defensive linemen. He would be a player that I'd be looking at in the late rounds, maybe as a priority free agent in the undrafted ranks as well, where the Seahawks have had a lot of success with interior defensive linemen. Now at pick 209, Kyle Granson, the tight end out of SMU. Not necessarily one of my favorite tight ends in this group, but he had production, and this is a guy that certainly could be an impact player at the next level, around 240 pounds. He is on the lighter side of the tight end spectrum, but he can motion into the backfield and play tight end. He's a better blocker than you would think at his size. I have questions about how he's going to hold up in that regard going against NFL competition, though. To me, there could be some blocking limitations as far as being an inline guy, but that ability to play fullback, to come inside and play in line, occasionally run routes out of the slot. He's a solid athlete, not the best athlete at the tight end position, but he can be a real factor down the seam. He's a guy that makes contested catches, had 9 touchdowns in a season, which was a record at SMU for tight end. So the production was there. You see some of the athletic traits. He looks like a player that still has some room to develop. I am concerned about the size from the Seahawks perspective, but at pick 209, because of his receiving skills and the lack of depth at tight end, it could be a pick that would make a lot of sense for the Seattle Seahawks, especially with a new offensive coordinator that may use tight ends more in the passing game. And the last pick here at 257, again, this is a requirement on all the mock drafts. You had to pick a quarterback. And at 257, Floyd picks Ian Book out of Notre Dame. Now, my colleague Rob Rang is a bigger fan of Ian Book than what I am. My book on Ian Book, I'm going to be honest, I never was overly impressed by him at Notre Dame. I thought he exhibited questionable decision-making a lot of the time, and it didn't always translate into interceptions. His interception numbers are actually pretty low throughout his career at the Fighting Irish. But part of that is opponents didn't take advantage of their opportunities. I feel like he could have thrown a lot more picks. He doesn't play well in structure. A lot of the big plays that he created were on extended plays. Now, we've seen Russell Wilson do that for years. So that obviously is something that teams are looking for. They like quarterbacks that are able to create when plays break down. The problem is I didn't see enough from him when plays didn't break down. He's a great athlete who can extend plays. I'm just not sold on him as an NFL quarterback. But at this stage, pick 257, when you're talking mid-late seventh round, then he's the type of project quarterback that is worth taking a stab at. So I think at that stage, he would be a very solid selection. I just wouldn't pick him any earlier because I have a lot of reservations about his ability to play quarterback in an actual structured offense at the next level. Our next mock draft here from Eric Lougheed, and this is another 5-pick draft. Javonte Williams out of North Carolina being pick 56. So Eric stayed with Seattle's native first selection, which was at the end of the second round, another running back. We've talked about Williams quite a bit on here. He has been a favorite on Seahawks mock drafts to this point. Another back that is very powerful, has good size, capable of breaking tackles, not necessarily a bulldozer, but he's a guy that can bounce off tackles. He'll break arm tackles. He rattles off some big runs, 19 rushing touchdowns last year for the Tar Heels. So he's a touchdown vulture. This is a guy that when he smells the end zone, he's going to get in there and made some big plays in the passing game as well when called upon, made a lot of improvements there. He'd be a fun back who fits the system. I don't like him as much as Najee Harris. He's not as good of a player as Harris, in my opinion, but late second, early third, he is a running back that I think would be on the radar if the Seahawks want to go at that position. He's one of the few backs that I think really lines up with what the Seahawks are looking for from a featured back. And he could be a good fit in Seattle's offensive scheme. At pick 129, second pick, Dallin Hayes out of Notre Dame. Again, I'm going to say this about another Fighting Irish prospect. And Hayes is certainly a player that's got some intrigue. I've watched a lot of Notre Dame the last few years. He's a player, when you watch him on film, you look at him and think, this guy looks like he should be one heck of a pass rusher. But it just never materialized. And he was kind of that hybrid guy that dropped back some in coverage. They rushed him off the edge quite a bit. The sack numbers just weren't there His career high, I believe, was 3.5 sacks. It's just not a guy that racked up a ton of sacks. Never met expectations in that regard, at least from what I was looking for out of him. But he's likely a Sam linebacker candidate. And we know the Seahawks could need a new player there because KJ Wright's a free agent. Bruce Irvin's coming off ACL surgery. He's a free agent. Certainly Hayes is a player that could be on the radar that could play that Sam backer position. He's around 260 pounds. You could maybe play him at Leo as well. I just have some question marks about him. He's a player that looked pretty good in Mobile. I just, on his game film, I haven't seen a consistent pass rusher that has the ability to win one-on-ones. And even though he plays with heavy hands, I don't think his technique is overly great using those hands, and he doesn't have a great array of pass rushing counters. There's a lot of development that needs to happen here with this kid. I just don't know if the Seahawks or whoever drafts him, you're going to have to really wait on this kid a little bit. So I'm not as high on him as some people are. He's a player I've seen some draft prognosticators putting in the second or third round. To me, pick 129 there, that seems about right. Maybe a little after that is where I would maybe consider picking him, because to me, he is a developmental project. Third pick at 168, one of my favorite corners in this draft class, Keith Taylor out of Washington, staying in the Pacific Northwest, good length, around 6'2", little under 200 pounds. He plays physical football. He'll come up and he'll tackle you. Sticky coverage. Not the greatest athlete in terms of top speed. Hip flexibility is something that's a little bit questionable, but he's a player that, again, he plays sticky coverage. I liked what I saw in Mobile, the one-on-ones, the game film. They weren't even testing him in that all-star game because his coverage was so good. And he got his hands on the football some. Not a guy that racked up a lot of interceptions. Not sure if that's a part of his game that's ever going to be accentuated, but he is certainly a player that can get his hands on the football. He's going to get in your face. He's going to play physical ball. He is somebody that I think has a lot of room to grow to because he didn't play a lot of games. He was a reservist first couple years for the Huskies with some of the NFL talent they had in front of him. He is a guy that's still got a lot of room to really grow and develop. I think he'd be a really fun project for Pete Carroll and company, especially at pick 168. Next quarterback here at 209, I'm not going to dive in very deep into because Tanner Morgan out of Minnesota actually is not going into the draft. Again, this is a pro football focus mock draft. Morgan was a player that many thought was going to have an opportunity to leave early, but didn't have a great condensed season for Minnesota. They only played a handful of games in the Big Ten, decided he's going to come back for his senior year, which was a great decision. I don't know that he gets drafted given how he played last year, but Tanner Morgan's a guy that'll be on the radar next season for teams looking for developmental projects at the quarterback position, but he's going back to Minnesota. So that pick's not going to happen. And then the last one here at 231, the Seahawks getting a receiver to close out the draft. Josh Emadobebe out of Illinois. He is a major project with high ceiling potential. And those are the kind of players that you pick in the seventh round. We saw him do it with Stephon Sullivan last year. The Seahawks admitted that he was a developmental project, but 6'2", 220 pounds. So he's a big dude at the receiver position. Good straight line speed, not necessarily a burner, but with that size, he doesn't have to be. What I wanted to see more from this kid on film, he's a former USC recruit, a former four-star recruit, and it just never really put everything together. After 1 year at USC, he transferred, he goes to Illinois. He did have 9 touchdowns in the season, but his body control and his ability to attack the football, they are works in progress. You see flashes, and then you see plays where you're just like, ooh, those are two areas of his game that he's got a long ways to go. The fact that he did score 9 touchdowns a couple years ago is encouraging, especially because Illinois did not have a good quarterback situation in either of the seasons he played there. But the overall production just hasn't been great. Again, this kid is a major project. There's a lot of things you see on film that are enticing that make you think with the right coaches, he could be a gem. But he is that kind of player, major project, high ceiling, that I would not touch until the sixth round. I think he's a late round guy that is going to take some time to really get acclimated in the NFL. If you get him coached up, he's got a chance to be a player that maybe sneaks up on people in a couple of years from now, is putting up some big numbers. I think he fits Seattle's offense as a vertical threat. A lot of the things they like to do, he does well, but there's a lot of room for development in terms of fundamentals in his game. So I wouldn't pick him any earlier than this. I think 231, though, was a good spot for him. So overall, this is a pretty solid draft. Unfortunately, again, Tanner Morgan is not going to be available this year, so no quarterbacks on here that are actually draft eligible. Coming up in the third quarter, I'm going to take a look at one last mock draft. This one has a lot more picks. I'm going to go really in-depth on this one that really fascinated me from our group of mock drafts that were submitted today. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar. They're unleashing perhaps their best tasting flavor yet, coconut brownie chunk. If you love the cookie dough chunk Built Bar, this one is going to blow you away. Dark chocolate, coconut, real brownie chunks. It really doesn't get better than that. You're going to have a hard time eating just one. And it's only 150 calories, 7 grams of sugar, and 15 grams of protein per bar. This is a limited time flavor, so you'll want to get yours today before it's gone tomorrow. Visit BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Join the Draft Network's Trevor Sikma and Ben Solak every weekday on Locked On NFL Draft. Every Monday through Friday, Trevor and Ben break down everything you need to know about the NFL Draft, upcoming prospects, and more through the draft scouting lens. With mock drafts every Monday, get an early look at which top prospects may be available for your team over at Locked On NFL Draft. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Continuing Mock Draft Monday, decided to make this a two-segment episode because I got a number of mock drafts today that had 8 or more picks. There were a couple that had 10+. The chances of that happening are pretty slim given the fact that Seattle only has 4 selections. That we have seen John Schneider work some miracles before. A couple years ago, they had 4 picks, and then the Frank Clark trade brought in a first-round pick, and then they ended up turning 5 selections into 11 new players. So it's possible, but didn't have the time on the show to go through more than 1 or 2 of those. So I was looking through them, and one in particular jumped out to me that I thought was very fascinating, and it came from the Twitter user Lord Thomas Swin. And it's going to start at pick 67. One of my favorite tackles in this draft class, Dylan Raidens out of North Dakota State. Good size, not great size necessarily, but he's right around 300 pounds. So a little on the light end of the spectrum, but he's got a tall frame. This is a kid that's got room to add muscle without compensating his elite athleticism at the position. And he is nasty, flat out nasty. He plays with a mean streak. Not the biggest tackle, as I said, but he dominated in Mobile. So any questions that people had about competition have been answered to an extent. He's going to be able to move people in the ground game. He's nasty at the point of attack. He gets his hands into you, and he has drive. He will punish you, and he'll create some push at the line of scrimmage. He's also a capable pass protector with plus athleticism. I would love this pick. This is another player. I'm not sure if he's available at 67 because of how well he played in Mobile. And he's a guy a number of different people I've talked to are expecting he's going to go in the first, early second round. I could very easily see this guy being in the first 32 picks. He's a guy he has really skyrocketed up draft boards. But if he falls in the second round, right there is your replacement, your heir apparent for Dwayne Brown, and maybe a player that you could make an argument can compete for playing time on the right side right away. That's how good this kid, Dylan Raidens, is. One of my favorite tackles in a really good offensive line class. And then at pick 124, we have another running back here, Trey Sermon out of Ohio State. There's a lot to like about this kid. He's got a lot of the intangibles the Seahawks look for at the running back position, around 213, 214 pounds. So he's got good size. He's right in that threshold the Seahawks look for. He's a guy that can hit home runs. Maybe the biggest difference between him and the 2 other running backs we've talked about on this episode, Najee Harris, as well as Javonte Williams, he's got that home run athleticism. This is a guy that when he turns on the extra gears, he can go 70, 80 yards and score a touchdown. And he runs with some pop to his pads too. This is a player that is going to take on contact. He's going to fight for extra yardage, not going to bulldoze people. Again, not a Marshawn Lynch style running back necessarily, but he's a physical runner. My big question marks, and these are 2 things that I think are a big deal when you're evaluating running backs. I question his durability. I think there's certainly some red flags there about him being an every down back and his ability to contribute on third downs. This is a player that had to fight and he had to scratch and claw to get reps. I mean, that's something that can be a positive. He hasn't gotten a lot of work at the college level, but he hasn't been a third down contributor. Not many receptions, not a guy that's had a lot of opportunities to protect in pass protection either. And I feel like he's very unrefined in those 2 areas of his game. So if you're looking for another feature back here, I don't know that Sermon right away can be that guy. Maybe he'd surprise me and just hasn't gotten enough opportunities doing those third down duties. But I'm worried about the durability and the lack of third down production at Ohio State. Those are two areas that I think are going to potentially drop him some in this draft. But if he's available in that 120, 130, 140 range, he certainly has a lot of traits that would intrigue the Seahawks. And I think maybe that's a better spot for them to pick a running back than, say, pick 64 when they've got a number of other positional needs. Third pick here on this one, Paulson Adebo out of Stanford. There are a lot of long athletic corners in this class. Looking at a guy that's around 6'1", 190, 195 pounds. He checks off a lot of boxes Seattle looks for at that outside corner position. He's tall. He's got some good length to him. He's a fluid enough athlete. Again, not a guy that's going to win 40-yard dash races, but he has good long speed. He's got good quickness. He's a player that plays physically. I've been a little bit turned off by the fact that he is overly aggressive at the corner position. That is an area that is going to need some work. His discipline overall, he will get burned on double moves sometimes by biting on pump fakes, biting on receivers, you know, receivers that can run really good quality routes, biting on those double moves. He has been susceptible to that kind of stuff, but good coaching can take care of that. And everyone knows the Seahawks have a very good coaching staff when it comes to working with young defensive backs. So again, pick 129. I'd be surprised if Adebo's there. He's a guy that I've been hearing in the 70s, 80s range. We're talking a mid third round pick. That's probably where he's going to go. But if he's there at 129, absolutely, he is a cornerback that could play early for the Seahawks that fits the mold of the type of player they like. On the outside, at pick 168, Darius Stills. I feel like he's another one that's been very popular on Seahawk mock drafts. A lot of the ones have been submitted. Stills getting picked, and certainly Rob Rang and I have talked about him a lot. He is one of my favorite prospects in this draft. He is a little undersized, around 285 pounds. So he's right at the bottom of that threshold for what the Seahawks look for at that position. But he's got long arms. He has plenty of length to play the position. He's got a great motor. That's maybe what jumps out to me most when I've watched West Virginia games over the last couple of years. Every time I watch their defense, I just kind of have to look and circle, and it's always Stills. That he's the player that just jumps out to me. I like the pass rushing potential he's got too. This looks like a guy that could come in for you right away with his motor, his athleticism, his hand usage. He looks to me like a player that could come in and immediately contribute as a pass rusher. I think he can play the run as well. My biggest red mark on him is he does occasionally have issues with maintaining his run fits and gap responsibility. Now, that's a big issue in Seattle. If you're not doing that, you're not going to be on the field. So he's going to have to iron that out. But a lot of the film I've watched suggests to me that he's more than capable of handling those things, that he can be responsible with his gap fits. He's got a chance to be a really good three tech early on. Again, I think a lot of these mock drafts, him going around 160, I'd be stunned if he's still there. To me, he's a player that his athleticism and the way that he plays in today's game, where you really want pass rushers, I think he's a guy that's going to go much earlier than a lot of these mock draft simulators are suggesting. Pick 172, a player I haven't watched very much from Georgia, Trey Hill. Few things that I took notes on here, a couple of Georgia games that I've watched. I do like the size, 6'4", around 330, 335 pounds. So he fits what the Seahawks like up front, or at least what they've liked in recent years with a new offensive coordinator, maybe a new run game scheme that's more zone, outside zone oriented. Maybe that's not the type of player you want at left guard or center, but I view him as a guard at the next level. I'm not sure that he's a center. Maybe he's a player that you could bring in and you could have slide Damian Lewis to center. There are some options there along the offensive line, but certainly this is a big mauler, 330 pounds. He's light on his feet for his size. Some question marks with the way that he's going to be able to handle more athletic interior rushers, but certainly he's a player that would fit the Seahawks mold, at least up to this season. Would make some sense to pick 172. And then rounding out this draft, three picks remaining. Pick 209, Israel Mukuamu out of South Carolina. This is another corner that has outstanding size and length, 6'3", 205. I will admit, when I go back and watch his film, I've seen this kid play for the last 3 years. Games in 2018, I was very intrigued. I thought this kid could be your next first, second round pick with his size at 6'3", that next long-armed, lengthy corner that teams are craving that rockets up draft boards. And he continued to play well in 2019, did not play near as well in 2020. And there were some things that started to concern me a little bit, looking at his tape. I'm worried about his slight frame. Is he going to be able to hold up as a tackler? He's a willing tackler, but is he going to hold up physically at the next level? And I'm concerned about the quickness issue. He has a lot of issues with getting in and out of his breaks, swinging his hips open, not the most fluid of athletes. So my big question is, he going to be able to cover your top tier NFL athletes at the receiver position? Is he going to be able to do that? Because he played a lot of different spots at South Carolina. He played in the slot. He matched up with tight ends. He played on the outside. He played regular slot against more athletic receivers. And he had success in all of those avenues. I'm just wondering where he translates to the next level. Is he a guy that can play that outside corner position as he continue to refine his technique? If he's healthier, is he going to play like he did in 2018 and 2019? Or is this your typical sub-package corner that ends up playing mostly in nickel and dime packages going up against tight ends? That's my big question mark here. I want to see how he runs at South Carolina's pro day. There are a number of factors at play here, but certainly guys have seen a lot of good tape. I've seen some things that have concerned me as well, most specifically last season. At 222, Patty Fisher, linebacker out of Northwestern. I love this kid. I love watching it because he's got a great motor and he's blue collar. This kid plays hard every single down. He's the type of kid that Northwestern has been able to build a solid program in the Big Ten around, but I don't like his fit in Seattle. And big reason why, he's just not a great athlete. This is not a guy that's going to drop back into coverage and make plays consistently in that avenue. He's not a guy that moves well in space. He can come up in between the tackles. He can stuff the run. That would excite the Seahawks, but he's a grinder. I just don't see him being a player that they would draft because of his athletic limitations. I don't know how much better he can get. He is a player that really played well early in his career at Northwestern. He was solid his entire career, but you never really saw him elevate his game very much. And I think a lot of that is because he doesn't have a very high athletic ceiling. As an undrafted player, he would intrigue me. I think he's a guy that's got the mentality the Seahawks are looking for, particularly on special teams, but he wouldn't be a guy I think they're looking at as a potential linebacker that could play on defense down the road, because I just don't think he's got enough athletic ability to do it. And then at pick 245, our quarterback pick, finally, I noticed that was the trend here. Nobody was panicking and picking a quarterback early to replace Russell Wilson. They were using late picks. Sam Ehlinger out of Texas, highly recruited, one of the top quarterback recruits in his class. He was supposed to be the quarterback that brought Texas back to being a national title contender, and you can't put all this on him. Unfortunately, things just didn't play out the way they were supposed to in Texas. They had some decent teams, but they weren't competing for a national championship, and he played well. I don't know that he necessarily lived up to expectations on an individual basis. He didn't lift up the team, I think, as some people envisioned when Texas brought him in. But you look at some of the skills that he has. He has great athleticism. He's another quarterback that can create outside of the pocket, outside of structure, when plays break down. Very similar to a quarterback that I talked about earlier here, Ian Book. What doesn't fit the Seahawks is Ehlinger does not have a strong arm at all. There are some quarterbacks in this draft class like Ian Book that you can dock them a bit for arm strength. But Sam Ehlinger, to me, is one of the weaker arms in this draft. He's not a guy that's going to consistently complete those downfield passes in the NFL. That's just not going to happen. He doesn't have that deep ball. I'm not sure about his ability to really throw the football into tight windows either. Again, because the arm strength, not a great anticipator either. I just question his ability to make the throws that you have to be able to make to be a successful quarterback in the NFL. I love the athlete. I love the leader. I think he's a very good young man. Everything I've read sounds to me like he has the DNA there to be the quarterback in the huddle, to really rally an offense. Could he be a decent project quarterback? Sure. But that arm strength and the indecisiveness that you see on film, it's always scared me about him, dating back to when he was first in the lineup for the Longhorns. I see a number of prospects in this draft that are far more NFL ready in terms of their arm strength and accuracy. I saw at times that Ehlinger was a player that he was a quarterback that benefited from his receivers being able to make really nice catches on throws that weren't on target. Maybe he's able to do that in the NFL with great receivers, but I just don't see him being a player that is going to be able to step in and be a starter caliber player. I don't even know if he can be a number two backup caliber quarterback in the NFL, because I have that many questions about his arm strength and his ability to read defenses and create plays. Again, like Book, within structure. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's Throwback Tuesday episode, Rob Rang will be back. We're going to be looking at the Seahawks 2016 draft class 5 years later. Where are all the picks now, and how did they pan out for the Seahawks? Plus, we'll look at the running back position in our position-by-position breakdown. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.